Breaking Banks Asia is brought to you today by Kamakura Co.
There are known knowns. There are things we know. We also know there are known unknowns. That is to say, we know there are some things we do not know. But there are also unknown unknowns. The ones we don't know, we don't know.
As has been pointed out, when you think of good defense strategies, you try to be aware of all the possibilities, including the unknown unknowns. If your business needs to be certain of the things you think you know, able to get clear answers to the things you don't know, and can quickly discover the important things you didn't even know you didn't know, then you probably need CRIS, the Kamakura Risk Information Service. CRIS provides real-time intelligence on business conditions across 68 countries, honing from 39,000 probabilities, each with exposures ranging from 30 days to 10 years. CRIS is used to manage exposures, identify trends, and see opportunities. And CRIS is the leading global service to ensure that you know what you need to know and can anticipate and see around the corner to see some of the things you didn't know you didn't know. If you want to know more, send an email to BBA for Breaking Banks Asia at Kamakuraco, KamakuraCo.com. BBA at KamakuraCo.com and learn more about CRIS and how Kamakura can help you. FinTech, or financial technology, is changing everything about the way we bank to the very concept of money itself. Welcome to Breaking Banks Asia, the podcast dedicated to exploring how this disruption is affecting the Asia-Pacific area. Here is your host, Simon Spencer.
So welcome to another episode of Breaking Banks Asia. We all know that innovation is a really tough game, and innovation within banking doubly so. So what about actually creating a new bank, or sometimes called a neobank? To actually do this, you must have some very special skills and tolerance for frustration and challenges. Over the years, I've watched closely a number of interesting reinventions of the traditional banking experience. First, with Bank Simple, which then just became Simple, founded by Australian Joshua Reich and CFO Shamir Kakal, and were then acquired by BBVA. More recently, of course, we have Moovin, founded by none other than our host, Brett King. And now, closer to home, we have a really interesting new startup that's working closely with Bendigo Bank called Alt. So I thought I'd reach out to them, given they're round the corner, and that's this week's interview. Okay, we're joined this morning by two very interesting fellows, Anson Parker and Don Pym, who have created a Melbourne-based fintech startup called Alt. So welcome to Breaking Banks Asia.
Thank you. Thanks, Simon.
So creating a fintech in Australia, obviously a very hard gig, creating what some people are calling a neobank. Do you guys call yourself a neobank? How do you feel about the neobank label?
We sort of try to avoid labels. I think Challenger Bank, Neo Bank, Digital Bank, all these titles that people put on it. I think for us, it's we talk about rebooting banking. Like, we're just trying to do something a bit different than what the others have done.
It sounds certainly better than banking 2.0.
That's
so 1990.
Yeah, that's much better.
So actually, take a moment. Tell us a little bit about Alt. What are you?
Yeah, so I guess we are a digital bank. There's all sorts of tricky legislative things about what you call yourself and that sort of stuff as well. So you've got to be careful in this market. Banking is highly regulated. We are essentially a technology company. We're a software company, but we've been working in banking in Australia for more than 5 years. So for us to be able to, take the next step and deliver what we think would be a better banking experience than what you can currently get is really where Alt sort of came from, as the seed of what Alt is.
It's really interesting. I knew Josh Reich when he was at Red Sheriff, and then he went on to create Bank Simple, which, as you note, then became Simple and obviously was acquired by BBVA. Melbourne does seem, or Australia does seem to incubate some really interesting banking disruptions. And obviously, we have Brett King and Moovin, and now we have Alt, and this is fantastic. As a software company, I'll call you a neobank, I do apologize. As a neobank, do you see yourself offering the full suite of banking services?
I think that's something to get to over time. Really what we want to do first up is just prove the sort of basics, the fundamentals of spending and saving. If we can make those lower friction, more compelling, and inform customers better, we can then start to look at things like credit, possibly mortgages one day, who knows. But we want to do it in a different way. We want to avoid giving customers sort of product offerings to choose from, and focus more on the needs and the services and actually speak more the customer's language. So that might not be sort of a blank check, if you like. You know, your average 18-year-old gets a credit card with a $2,000 limit and thinks, I've got $2,000 cash to spend, and off they go and sort of get themselves into trouble. We're looking at sort of different approaches to that, maybe avoiding some of those pitfalls.
In many ways, I've had a few people describe this as the shift from gymnasium to personal trainer, you know, where the bank behaves like a gymnasium, but really what the customer wants is a personal trainer. Does that sort of resonate with you?
Absolutely. I think that's a great analogy. One thing we've always...
You can use that, by the way.
Yeah.
it's yours now.
Thanks. You know, we've been very focused on that sort of ideology of, you know, banks are very much one size fits all, but they have a huge diversity of customers, right? You have everything from a student, maybe getting some cash off mum and dad, to someone with, you know, a new homeowner, to a retiree. Yet today they all get exactly the same banking experience, more or less. So what we're looking to do is actually use the power of software. This is one of the great things about software, is that we can have a personal trainer, if you like, for every individual customer that adapts to their needs, the data that, you know, they have, their financial position, those kind of things, to offer a much more personalized experience.
Now, when we met earlier, we talked about how you were recruiting for your team and the sort of culture you have at Alt. And you know, this is a radio show for adults, so I can speak plainly. You spoke about a no dickheads policy, and I love that. And it's actually a phrase I've heard a few times. And to me, it feels like an Australian version of the don't tolerate competent jerks. You know, there's been a bit of work done about, you know, don't hire the competent jerk, because while they're competent, the baggage they bring is just too toxic to your startup. Tell me about your idea around don't hire dickheads. What does that mean to you?
I mean, the no dickhead policy is for us is critical. You know, it doesn't matter what the business is, and whether it's a startup or a scale-up or whether it's a big business, people are the asset. People, the team, is what really matters. So for us, you know, we're a small team, 25 people, and we often would turn people away rather than have someone that's highly skilled. We would choose someone that is highly skilled and has the experience. Maybe we've worked with them before and we know their track record, and they're not a dickhead, right? I mean, you can't have one or the other. You really need to have, to build the right culture, you've got to have the right people in the right place at the right time working on the most exciting project that we can think of. So that's really, really critical to us, especially as a smaller team.
And that really speaks to having a really robust network, so you hire people you know, or people you know them.
That's right. Yeah, so sort of one degree of separation is our hiring policy. We don't advertise positions. We, you know, people just hear about what's happening on the grapevine. You know, we might be at a barbecue, or we might just say, you know what, we need someone to do, I don't know, design. Who do we know that can do that? And then we reach out. We've never hired anyone who isn't already gainfully employed. You know, we're after the very best people. And it doesn't matter also if they're in San Francisco or London or New York, wherever they are. We're based in Melbourne, so we have the team, everyone's here in the same office. And so we really just reach out to our network and try and get the very best people to work on it.
Now, you're on radio here, so what sort of people are you looking for?
Well, you know, one of the other philosophies we have is that if you can't all sit around the table and break bread together, you're too big. Once you start forgetting people's names, you don't know their partner or their kids or whatever, I think it gets a bit big. So for us at the moment, we are looking for you know, some quality testers, because we have a really, really strong development and design outfit. But what we really would like to do is do more of the testing and also more of the marketing side of things. Whereas in our previous 5 years working with banks, they do a lot of that stuff. So things like customer support, marketing, and user testing are things that they have those competencies.
So people who can take you through into your growth stage.
Exactly, yeah.
So for a long time, I think it's been hard to work with banks. There's been probably a feeling within banks that they looked at startups or fintech disruption as something to be perhaps contained or as something that potentially a threat. And while I certainly think there are elements of threat, I think we're seeing a shift, and we're seeing more and more banks start to get on the front foot and actively engage with the startup community and various disruptive ideas that are being explored out there. How are you finding it?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly how we found it. So we sort of got into banking nearly 6 years ago now, and it was quite adversarial. It was very difficult to come into a market that's very strongly held. And, you know, every Australian has a bank account, obviously. In fact, every Australian has two or three bank accounts. The big four dominate, and unless you can actually find a way, a niche or whatever, to get into the market, it's quite difficult. We were very fortunate, though, because we partnered with Bendigo and Adelaide Bank, and that partnership has blossomed over the last 5 years. They're actually quite forward-thinking and innovative in the sense that they brought on board this relationship with a startup 5-6 years ago when it wasn't cool. Now it's cool and other banks are doing it, but that's been a journey.
The second tier banks, and no offense to the second tier banks, to call them second tier banks, you know, they have actually had a track record in many cases of pioneering some really interesting things. And, you know, Bendigo did the bank mobile telco deal quite some time ago, and has done a number of things that I think they're to be applauded for. And that agility that the second tier banks have had, I think, has been something that they've then taken to the sort of the majors, you know, and now obviously we're seeing huge transformation activity underway at ANZ and all the banks for that matter in Australia, to try and get the sort of agility that the smaller banks have actually had for a little while in some cases.
Yeah, and we found that's exactly right. We have, in the start of the journey, worked together with Bendigo to help them adopt new technologies and improve the way they develop software and things like that. But we very quickly bumped into people working at the big banks, and we did a stint with ANZ, we did a stint with Westpac, and those guys over the last 5 years have got a hell of a lot more embracing of the fintech industry. Some of the disruptors, you know, the technology that's coming out at the moment is really making banking a bit different. And so, yeah, well, we've actually seen the market shift in the last 5 years, and it is probably easier for a fintech startup or scale up to get involved with a bank now than it was 5 years ago.
We're sort of seeing a little less of that sort of immune response or that not invented here problem. You know, I often describe sort of innovation in a bank as being, you know, like a foreign antibody that you've injected, and it's about sort of does it act as an antibody where it gets neutralized, or does it actually take seed and go somewhere? And there's been a tremendous amount of investment inside banks to try and explore really interesting ideas that have not gone anywhere. And I think what we've started to see is the banks have realised that as a limitation in their DNA, to mix metaphors, and engaging with the startup community, engaging with folks like you guys, has given them some of the missing ingredients that they need to actually cut through and actually deliver something.
Yeah, with their dominant market share, I don't think it makes a big dent in their business to actually take the leap of faith and work with innovators, work with technology companies, try and do something different. There's no doubt that we compete for customers, we compete for deposits or lending, as the case may be. But look, it's a real dent on their overall balance sheets. And I think that over the next 10 years, we're going to see a shift in customer behaviour and what customers expect from their bank. And that's sort of where Alt comes in, really, because having worked with the big banks and the mid-tier banks over the last 5 years, we know the sort of challenges that customers face, the desires that customers have, the changing marketplace with the technology and so on. So I think we're in a good position with that experience to be able to apply the technology to what it is that customers want now and what it is that they don't know that they want yet.
The regulators are reluctant to allow the neobanks to include the word bank. So these software businesses like yours who are creating new types of experiences for financial services, the regulators are reluctant to try and allow those organisations to have the label bank. But is that perhaps actually a risk to the banks? Because if you bring up a generation of people who are used to using an app like yours and it doesn't have the word bank on it, then is there a real risk that you'll have a generation of people who will just go, well, we don't deal with banks, I just deal with Alt, or I just deal with Moovin, or I just deal with some really clever new software platform that helps me achieve the goals that I have in my life. And it's powered by a bank, but it's the bank under the covers. Yeah. So in some ways, the being... taking the bank label away from you is a blessing as well as perhaps a challenge.
Yeah, I think it's an open question as to how important that word is to consumers or customers or people, if you like. You know, we saw Bank Simple drop the bank and just become Simple, and I think that's a sort of a sign of the times that maybe for the millennial generation, if you like, they're growing up on apps. They're not kids, so they don't care so much about the labels like bank.
But we are also seeing the regulators, particularly in the UK and now in Australia, engaging with startup communities, technology companies. And there are ongoing discussions now with the regulators, APRA in Australia and ASIC, around how these neobanks, challenger banks, digital banks can become banks and get their own license. And for us, that's one of the big decisions as a business is, do we apply for a license and become a regulated bank, or do we partner with a bank, in our case, Bendigo Bank, in order to operate in the regulated space? Because, there are other options. The Pocketbooks, the Acorns, these sort of guys, they essentially play an intermediary role by delivering what people want, but not having to be regulated as a bank.
Yeah, having a banking license and having done a lot of work with Basel II and Basel III, there's a lot of baggage there. There's a lot of headaches, and there's lots of reasons why banks will say we're risk adverse, and that has slowed down their pace of innovation to a fair extent. So not having to carry that baggage around, but being able to innovate and create incredibly new types of experiences that are relevant to the next cohort of people coming through, not having that baggage is probably a good thing in some respects.
Well, stick to your strengths. Like, the banks are really good at that stuff. We're really good, and others are really good at building the customer interface, the customer portal, the apps, the new ways of managing customer behavior, the data management, the AI, all that new stuff that's happening. These fintech startups are really good at that stuff. So I think if you stick to your knitting and the banks can work together with the startups, you actually get the best of both worlds. A Monzo or some of the overseas banks that we've seen, that Atom and Starling and so on, and to see those guys actually from scratch get a license and build a whole new bank, that's a long journey, a hard journey. In Australia, that's probably at least a couple of years away.
Because I think the traditional approach will see banking through a lens of, we have checking products, savings products, credit products, and those sorts of products. Whereas the future of financial services might be completely new types of products, new types of experiences, products that are driven around personal goals or objectives and notions of cash hubs and notions that are quite different to the traditional architecture of banking today.
Yeah, maybe they won't even be products. I think that, you mentioned experiences. What we've found is that traditionally banks have been set up to create products and then sell those products to customers, or for customers to consume those products. What people want now is, especially in the younger generation, the app generation, the web generation, people that are online all the time, internet savvy, got mobile phones, all that stuff. What people want now is actually to deliver an outcome, to live their life, and for banking to be in the background. They don't necessarily want to engage with a bank. They know they have to do banking. They know you need the trust, you need somewhere to store your money, you need to be able to pay people, those sort of things. They're actually services, not products. And so I think there's a shift going on globally, not just in Australia, where we're moving away from products. No doubt there's products in the background somewhere powering these services, but the behavioral analytics, the engagement and customer experience and all those things is actually what people want. They don't want necessarily banking.
Yes, absolutely. So just wind the clock back a little bit. Where did you guys start? Did you come out of an incubator? Did you bootstrap yourself? Was it a bunch of people in a garage? What's your sort of origin story?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Myself and my business partner, just two people sitting around his kitchen table, we're chatting about what's next. And, we just decided to start a company, and it was nothing to do with banking at the time. It was like, let's start a company and let's get the very best people we know, the no dickheads policy, the one degree of separation. Let's just hire the best technology team we could imagine. And we started calling up our mates that we'd worked with before, calling up employees that we'd had before, just reaching out to our network. And within a very short time, we were, half a dozen people, then we're 8 people, 10 people, 12 people. And it was almost fortuitous that we were talking to a bank about raising some capital. And in the discussion with the CEO, he said, we're redoing our internet banking. Are you guys interested in something like that? And we weren't sure.
So that basically gave you your path to become bootstrapped of sorts.
Yeah, fully self-funded. We've not raised capital. We don't have to worry about shareholders. We're two blokes with a team of 25 people. That's it.
That's brilliant. And that gives you complete control, or high degree of control, over your strategy and your destiny.
And your culture. Your business itself and the products that you offer, or the way that you deliver the software that we build is obviously part of business growth, but the culture is important to actually delivering the best outcome.
Now, this might be a little bit contentious, but there's been a lot of conversations around creating incubators, and there's obviously great work they've done out at Stone and Chalk and various other programs. But I do sometimes feel that the bootstrap startup sometimes gets lost in the conversation a little bit. Do you find that at all?
Yeah, I think in Australia, there's a big gap between venture-funded startups and bootstrap startups. And I think that when one or two people get together, a few co-founders or even a single founder, and they do what they love doing, the journey to commercialize that in Australia is hard. It's harder than it is elsewhere. And it's hard to get angel funding. It's hard to get venture capital funding of any decent size. It is hard. So I think that the Stone and Chalks and the York Butter Factories and these guys actually provide a fantastic service, which helps to, I think incubate's the right word. It helps to incubate that innovation and entrepreneurialism, that people actually have somewhere to go, people to meet. It provides an environment for people to sort of build out from where they are to where they need to be, because raising capital is hard. Dealing with shareholders is hard. Building a product and getting people to love it, it's hard.
And I think we had Mike Smith in our offices earlier in the year, and Mike, obviously former CEO of ANZ Bank. And what Mike brings to places like York Butter Factory is just incredible experience in financial services, in operating at that senior executive level. And, his contribution there, I think, is not just being able to open some doors, but also that experience with an industry. What I found really interesting in Mike's perspective was, how much he had understood of the sort of startup disruptions that are happening around financial services. So, getting that blend and that balance right was between, incubator and bootstrap. Creating quick paths to becoming sort of, whether it's cash flow positive or just having first revenue rather than having something that's a great speculative PowerPoint deck or a great sort of prototype but with no customer in mind. And I think, both York Butter Factory and Stone & Chalk are no doubt acutely aware of the need to find ways to drive revenue quickly. And as I said, people like Mike are great at opening doors and helping startups get access to some of those customers.
I think Mike and people like yourself and others, like whoever has the experience just to lend a hand, we're more than happy to as well. Like lend a hand to the startups, lend a hand to the entrepreneur.
Do you see Alt going international? Is it an Australian-centric business for the moment, or is it something you're going to take international?
I think that's always, that door is sort of open. It's obviously banking's quite a country-specific sort of industry to be in. There's different regulations in different countries. Different payment technologies, but the fundamentals of what we're building, I think, would translate well, really, into most markets.
So if there's a bank in Singapore or Hong Kong or Malaysia or Indonesia or even the Pacific Islands or New Zealand who's perhaps listening to this, they can reach out to you and say, hey, we want to be a back end for this jurisdiction.
Absolutely. We as 25 people, we're focused on the Australian market today, and we want to prove out success that our idea of the bank of the future is right, that it works. Australia is a great testing bed because we're a small percentage of the world. So if we can actually, in an isolated kind of environment, test a highly regulated banking environment, test our ideas and our thoughts and the future roadmap of what we think banking of the future is, if that resonates really, really well over the next 1 or 2 years, it's obvious that global expansion is something exciting for us. So yeah, if there's anyone out there that's listening, we'd love to talk to them. But I think right now we have to remain focused on actually getting to market and getting those first few customers over the line and filling up our backlog.
Many banks have talked a lot about their data, but very few banks have actually really leveraged their data effectively. And what I mean by leverage, I mean using their data to build predictive models, contextual models, building rich personas, building a deeper understanding of their customers from not just what they're doing, but why they're doing it. How does the why play in your thinking?
I think the other, I'll come to that, but I think the other part of that question is that banks are often doing that stuff for themselves. So looking at the data for themselves, PFM providers have looked at the data for the customer. We actually need to see a merging of those two worlds. Like there's benefits in understanding the data across a customer set for the bank itself to be able to do better, to be able to offer more relevant features, to be able to offer better products, to all those sort of things. But that's not what people want. That's what the bank wants. So you have to find a balance between delivering what the bank wants, which is where the focus has traditionally been, and delivering on that big data and the decision-making and the pattern recognition and behavioral analysis and all that stuff from the customer's perspective. So for us, the customer is number one. We hear that from banks. We don't see that. For me, you know, it's really important that you're customer driven, that the customer gets what they want, not what we think they want. Really, really, really tricky part of banking.
And that almost takes you back to the personal trainer metaphor again. Mm. You know, because if you have a conversation with your personal trainer and the personal trainer really knows you, they know what you're capable of, they know what you're interested in, and they're able to make relevant upsells and cross-sells and suggest products that are relevant, but they're going to be relevant to your goal and your objectives and your sort of financial well-being and what you're trying to achieve in life. And so to move to that degree of trust is been a hard thing for many organizations to try and move to. And you know, that ability to leverage data with that sort of degree of precision.
That's right. I think it also requires sort of a new model of interaction, I guess, with customers. And that is, you know, it needs to be more about a conversation and less about here is something we think you'll like. It's more about, you know, based on your behavior, would you like this? So I think that's, you know, that's a tough thing for banks, I think, to change that way of working, to look for ways in which customers can actually influence the software or the product. I mean, you know, to give a few examples, I guess, one of the things that Alt's focused on is really identifying spend and helping people understand, for example, the businesses they spend money with. There's a real disconnect that people have currently with, you know, when they go back and look at a statement, for example, of the previous month, there's a lot of stuff on there people don't recognize. And that really goes to a whole bunch of legacy issues we don't need to get into around sort of point of sale and merchant terminals and how things are configured. And it's a really messy problem. And there's not really a software solution just out of the box to solve it. You actually really need the help of customers to say, you know, in a case where we don't know a merchant either, we can ask the customer, where were you? Or we know their location maybe from their smartphone, and we can say, oh, were you just at this business? I mean, that's sort of not a question a bank would normally ask a customer, you know, can help us identify the spending. But it's really essential to solve this problem, I think.
And it's contextual. So when you ask a customer, if you have real-time notifications and you ask a customer, did you just buy something from that burger joint? And they're literally standing at the counter getting their burger. Then it's an easy contextual answer for them to say, yes, I am at the burger joint. Now, if you tried to identify that spend a day later or a week later, you don't know what it is. You can't remember. So contextual awareness is something that traditionally, not just banks, but any big business has not been very good at.
And if you've asked that question, you know, there's a legitimacy to that question. You know, you're protecting their security and making sure that transaction was done by them. But also that also opens the door to a legitimate conversation of, can we suggest something else that might be relevant? You know, there's a great ice cream place down the road that you might want to consider and link to the broadsheet or the local, you know, blog about that. You can continue the conversation going in a legitimate way that's authentic.
Yeah, well, it's also that you can understand the spend better, because if we know that you've bought a burger and therefore it's takeaway versus some groceries that, you know, some vegetables or whatever, it might actually go to the customer's life goals. Forget about their financial goals. Someone might want to be healthier. So we can actually engage in a different conversation that you can't engage with if you're just looking at financial data. So once you start having that context, it actually changes the conversation that you have with your customers. The other thing is it helps the customer to make a choice. So if a customer has some PFM software or an Excel spreadsheet or some sort of budgeting software or whatever, that helps them with some financial stuff. Once you've then got that goal, if we can in real time say you've exceeded that goal or you've achieved that goal or do you want to start this goal, you know, that's a conversation that is harder to have if you're at the back end of that conversation a day later or a week later.
So for many people, banking is not just unsexy. It's actually something that's scary. It's something that it actually builds anxiety. And the more they interact with banks, the probably more anxious they get. They know they need to budget, but actually the act of budgeting is a barrier. And actually, you know, while it would actually solve some of their financial anxiety, it actually is a source of financial anxiety, the whole question. So in your thinking, to what extent do you look at sort of stress and the mindset of the customer, and how do you help the customer, sometimes perhaps in spite of themselves, but how do you help the customer to reduce their financial anxiety?
Well, I think, you know, the first thing is that we need to remove that kind of stigma of good and bad decisions or guilt or things like that from spending. So we'll sort of come back to this theme, but we try to be very judgment-free in that sense so that we don't sort of shame someone into feeling so bad they just completely disconnect. We want to, A, avoid that. I think the other thing is that, you know, our approach to this sort of space is sort of less like a Weight Watchers like approach where we're sort of measuring every calorie and more like sort of a grilled approach, I guess. It's a healthy alternative. It's a mass market approach that's not about a complete sort of reformation of your life and your financial behavior, but just an awareness. So out of the box, we want to provide great value to people. It shouldn't be a really high engagement type platform that you need to go on and categorize spending and do all sorts of sort of busy work to even get any sort of insight out of. So it's important for us that out of the box, people can start to see value and feel more connected to their finances. And that's even just simple things like could be real-time notifications when they spend, just giving them that kind of spark of awareness and building that relationship to the customer is really essential to this because we have to keep them involved, but sort of low effort, you know?
So to build sort of financial literacy over time.
Yeah, it's a good one. Financial literacy because it's both sides of the equation. So you talk about stress, and stress is often caused by bad financial behavior. What is bad financial behavior? I don't know. It's different for different people. So rather than being judgmental about what that is, if you put it into the context of the customer and they can make those decisions for themselves, they can actually also focus on the opposite side, which is good financial behavior. So having a budget might be a logical thing to do, but it requires effort. So if your bank is invisible, it's in the background, and you can actually live your life and your bank can make suggestions, your bank can understand and issue you with insights, your bank can help you make a decision, then they're the sort of things where then you're actually encouraging the positive behaviours. So hopefully over time, certainly not in the, you know, in the early stages, but over time we can build a contextual awareness, behaviour modification for customers who want to do that. And for those customers that just want to bank, they can just bank.
Awesome. So what does the next 12 months look like for you?
Yeah, lots of work, basically. we have a plan to really be out in the market in a big way, I guess, by mid-next year. But in the meantime, we're sort of ramping up through an internal alpha and then a beta. So if people want to be a part of the journey, they can go to our website, alt.com.au, and sign up for early access. And those people hopefully will start to get access probably early next year.
So you've clearly got a full backlog of things to be building over the next 6 to 12 months. To what extent is the notion of a marketplace or an ecosystem in your thinking? So you know, to what extent are you going to build the entire application front end yourself versus potentially create more of a platform where other innovators can build around you and extend your capabilities into other directions?
Yeah, I mean, our view is very strong that collaboration amongst fintechs and collaboration with banks and established players, and whether they be share trading, insurance, mortgage, lending, whatever it is, collaboration is the key. So for Alt, we are focused right now. We're limited resource, so we're focused right now on making sure that we can deliver a digital bank that people want. Everything we do is being built in the context of open APIs. We want to have APIs. We want people to be able to jump on board. Getting a banking license is hard. Doing banking in Australia is hard. If people can hook into an API that Alt provides and have the banking stuff taken care of, that's awesome.
So I can get a bunch of buddies together in a garage or here at Edge Labs, and we could go build a business version of Alt if you like.
Yeah, I mean, in the future, right? Like, I mean, that's definitely in our roadmap. You see, for example, you know, like Stripe in the US, what they've done in payments. We would love to do that sort of thing for banking. It's a hard proposition. It's a complicated marketplace. It's highly regulated. It's also a hard proposition in terms of the breadth of products, not just payments as one product. We're talking a whole bunch of them. But absolutely, having an API and working together with the Spaceships of the world or the Clovers of the world or whoever else there is
Acorns.
Out there, Acorns, yeah. Whoever, that's exactly the sort of thing. There is another problem that addresses. One of the challenges right now is the banks are not as open as everyone would love. And getting your data out of a bank is difficult. And we're seeing the movement happen in Europe about open banking and this sort of stuff. So what that means right now that nearly everybody connects their Acorns or their pocketbook or whatever to their bank by giving their username and password. And that is not awesome. So one of the things we'd like to address in the future is if you have these APIs and you can share data in an open way, then those sort of intermediaries, we called them before, but those sort of applications that give you a service or a customer experience that banks don't currently give you are actually able to do that securely in the future. Now, for everyone in the industry to agree and for open standards to come out and all the rest of it, it's going to take time. So with Alt, we would like to address some of those problems in really short order so that we can improve the integration between startups and fintechs and banking.
Yep. And that basically allows you to then build progressively an ecosystem around your platform.
Absolutely.
And you're making some announcements this week at the Intersect Festival?
Yeah, we are. So actually this afternoon, we're going to be on the main stage, and we're really just telling people about what Alt is and really about, a little bit about the journey of where we've come from and where we'd like to go to. So we are in production right now, running the internal alpha that I mentioned. And so we're making real payments, and we'd like to do some live demos at Intersect as well, so people can see that this, that Alt is real. It's not a PowerPoint. It's not something we're talking about. It's actually working right now. To get on the wait list, I think, is the goal. We really encourage people to express their interest, probably for two reasons. One is if you get in early, then you're able to actually get an account, you know, early next year when we go public. Before that, the opportunity for anyone that's on the on the Alt sort of bandwagon is to be able to actually participate and give us input and feedback so that we can build Alt better and we can actually build what people want. So I think that, you know, there's really good reasons why we've been sort of flying under the radar for the last year while we've actually got all the bits and pieces in place in order to be able to build a bank. And now we want to take what we have and start getting people involved in it. So I'll just for the benefit of those that are listening, if you join alt.com.au, you'll be able to get onto the wait list.
The creating a wait list worked really well for the folks out at Spaceship, and I think they did a tremendous job in building a lot of buzz about what was coming there, and then obviously having launched, and I have to disclose I use Spaceship myself. They came out with a big bang and then they've built the community and they've collaborated with that community. So I think there's definitely something to be said for signing some your first sort of cohort of customers to be sort of fans or partners and champions who you then collaborate with and you listen to. And I've certainly seen that occur with Spaceship as well.
Yeah, I mean, what's awesome for us is that we, you know, behind the scenes made a list of the key influencers that we'd like to talk to and all the normal marketing things that you do. And then we had a couple of tweets and just a really low key about this thing Alt is coming. And one of the people that was on the very top of our key influencer list was the first person to sign up, you know. So for us, it was like, wow, it's actually something that people want. It's resonating with the people that we thought would be interested in it. And so it's a very exciting time. I think in the next 3 to 6 months, there's going to be a lot happening in this space in Australia. The regulators are looking at making it possible for restricted licenses for fintechs. We've got other digital banks that are, you know, have announced or that are in the process of announcing. So it's going to be a really exciting space over the next 6 months. And I'd like to think that Alt will play an important role in helping to shape the industry to come.
Fantastic. Well, look, thank you very much for joining us here this morning. And I very much look forward to your presentation at Intersect this week. And I look forward to following you. And with a bit of luck, I'll be on your wait list.
No worries. Thanks, Simon.
Thank you very much. So that's the show for this week. Follow us on Twitter at @BBanksAsia. Subscribe to the podcast and also subscribe to the daily newsletter. If you know someone who's doing something that we should know about, reach out. We're always interested in interviewing some of the most interesting change makers and thought leaders from across the region. Have a great week, and I look forward to talking with you all again. Thank you.